All right, Shabbos say good morning. Good morning. Let us begin by thanking all of our sponsors to thank. Our Talmud Torah sponsor for the month of Shvat, Mrs. Selma Wolf, for dedicating all of her Shemir Drashos this month with immense gratitude to Hashem for all of the refuas and the merit of her refuah shlema for all of those in need, and the schus of our brave soldiers, and the merits Hashem, and the schus of the return of our hostages. Our week of learning sponsors, Derek and Lauren Fine, in memory of Derek's mother, Rachel Bas Shmuel, our Daf Yomi sponsors, Yossi opened in the schus of refuah shlema for Luna Bas Yona Tova. And we dedicate all of Maseches Bava Kama, Le'ilui Nishmas, Master Sergeant Elio Michol Charush Hashem Yikom Damo. We hope that the merit. I had to do it because he paid for it. That's the only mamish. It was, exactly what I'm walking into over there, but all right. We hope that the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the Neshamas will have an Aliyah, the families in Nechama. And we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, our soldiers will be successful. Bechol ma'asei yedehem, and in the merit of Hashem, each and every one of our hostages will be returned to their mishpacha. So, Rabosai, with that, let us begin. So today's daf is Tzadik Vav 96. We are picking up in the merit of Hashem on Tzadik Yam Beis 95b, and we are picking up at Tanya Kavosei Derav Papa, which is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 17 lines up from the bottom. So remember again, we saw in yesterday's daf Rav Papa's statement, which actually got into a very interesting machlokis regarding Shevach Shagabe Gzelo. Remember again, we were speaking about, we're kind of enmeshed. There's so much we have to kind of unravel over here. Takanas Hashavim, but now, of course, what we are is we're right embedded in the sugya of when a thief steals something. So obviously, let's start with what everybody agrees with. What everybody agrees with is he's not going to pay any less than what the animal will. Actually, I take it back. So when a thief steals an object and now he wants to make restitution, so how do you evaluate restitution? So obviously, again, we'll say even in that question, there's so many different variables. What are the variables? Is the object itself that he stole in existence or not? If it's in existence, can he go ahead and say, Harishal Chalaf Anecha, here, this is what I stole, this is what I'm giving back. And really, we don't even have to really get into the valuation of the item, because maybe it doesn't even matter. Maybe what matters is, what I stole is exactly what I'm giving back. Or maybe not. Maybe at the end of the day, valuation is locked in at the time of the theft, which is really what our Mishnah seems to indicate. Okay. Then furthermore, what happens if there is appreciation? Does the appreciation ultimately belong to the gazlan, or does the appreciation go back to the owner? Suppose I said that was really the machlokes that we were dealing with yesterday with Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon. But the Gemara wanted to suggest that at the end of the day, there was another sub-machlokes. What was the sub-machlokes? It's what we call Shevach Sha'al Gabe Gzela. What happens if there's, suppose in the world of appreciation, there's two different keys of appreciation. Case number one would be, let's say, a case of where Reuven stole an animal from Shimon. Reuven stole a sheep. The sheep developed a thick coat of wool, and the wool was shorn. So now again, so who gets to keep that appreciation? That's case one. Case two is where the Reuven stole the sheep, and the sheep developed a thick coat of wool. Now, under this circumstance, who gets to keep that wool? That's what we call Shevach Shagabe Gezela. So the Gemara was suggesting that at the end of the day, so now Rav Papa was the one who said that ultimately everyone agrees, Shevach Shagabe Gezela, the Gazlan Havri. Everyone agrees that Halacha Lamaisa, any appreciation that's on the actual body, all right, attached to the actual stolen object, belongs to the Gazlan. So we'll say that's where we're picking up. So Tanya Kavah says to Rav Papa, we have a brace that supports Rav Papa. Rabbi Shimon says, Rowan Osa Ki'ilu Hi Shuma Eslo Bekasaf Lemechza Lishlish Ulurevia. That Rabbi Shimon said that Aloch Lameisa, we view of us, remember again, we saw so much yesterday, that we view the animal as if the animal is valuated, right? We lock in the value of the item. We evaluate the animal at the time that it was stolen. And ultimately, again, we view appreciation as being partially owned by the thief, either again for a half, for a third, or for a quarter of the value. This goes back yesterday to what we discussed, that there's another potential possibility of appreciation valuation, which is maybe the thief shares in the appreciation. In other words, maybe it's not a question of does he get everything, does he get nothing, but maybe there's a third model, ultimately again, of sharing in part. Rav Ashi said, Ki avina bi Rav Kahana, ibay lan. So when I was in the yeshiva, when I was in the house of Rav Kahana, the following question was posed. So ibay lan, Rabbi Shimon damar lamechza lishlish l'raviyah, according to Rabbi Shimon, who says that the thief shares in the appreciation. He gets a portion of the appreciation, not the total amount, but also not nothing. So the Gemara says, Ki misalkina le, pitami misalkina le, odilma mi bisra shakol. So when we pay off the thief, so we'll say, let's go with the model now that the thief shares in the appreciation to some degree. So when he shares in the appreciation, halacha lamaisa, how do we pay him off? Do we pay him off in cash? Or is he entitled to money? Or is he entitled to an actual share of the appreciation? Now, the literal translation over here is from the meat. So let's say, for example, the appreciation in question is Reuven stole a cow, right? The cow becomes pregnant, and now the cow gives birth. So do we say that Reuven, that Shimon could pay Reuven off in money, right? Whatever, let's say, however we evaluate the appreciation, but let's say it's worth $200. Here's $200, or is Reuven entitled to actual, like, meat from the calf once that it's shechted? How do we do that? So the Gemara says, Pshat Lameha, and we answer that question from here. Da'am Rav Nachman, Amr Shmuel, Shlosha Shamin Lahen HaShevach, U'ma'alin Osin B'damin. We'll say, in general, there are three people who get the opportunity to share an appreciation, and Halacha L'Maisa, we go ahead and we pay them off. We pay off their portion in money. Be'eluin, these are the people. Bechar lepashut, balchov lelokeach, ubalchov liyisomim. So both say these happen to actually be very interesting cases. Let's just take a quick look at Rashi. Bechar lepashut, listen to this. Sheshbicho es ha nechasim kodem chaluka. Ubishas chaluka, notal ha bechar pishnaim bekarkos. Tzarach lahachzir lepashut revia hashevach shalchelek bechor bidmos. So it's actually an interesting case. Let's say you have brothers that own an estate, and what happens before the property division, ultimately one of the younger brothers improved a parcel of property that then becomes the possession of the Bechar. Bechar gets Pishnayim. So part of the Bechar's Pishnayim, he gets a piece of property that was improved by a younger brother. So ultimately, the Bechar is obligated to make some level of restitution, right? Reflecting the investment of the younger brother in what is now his property, the older brother's property. So again, so he gives him, so Tzarech Lahachzir Lepashut Revia Hashevach Shalchelik Bechor B'mos. So we'll say these are all cases of where you have to go ahead and compensate someone for the investment, for the appreciation that they created for you. And again, in all of these cases, ultimately you pay them off the appreciation in money and not in object. So case number one is where, again, younger brother improved property that then becomes part of the inheritance of older brother. Older brother is obligated to go ahead and compensate him for a portion of that appreciation. He pays him off in money. That's case number one. Case number two, Bal Chov Lelokeach, look at Rashi. Bal Chov Atorev Lekuchos Bishvil Chov Sheyesh Lo Al HaMocher. Ein Lo Koach B'ma Sheyesh Biach Lokeach U'Misalko Bal Chov B'damim. Next case. Reuven lent Shimon money. As a result, Reuven has a lien against Shimon's property. Shimon sold off the property to Levi. Shimon defaults. Reuven goes and collects the property from Levi. But in the interim, what happened? Levi improved the property. So as much as Reuven, the creditor, is entitled to seize the property in satisfaction of his debt, halacha lemaisa, he is not permitted to go ahead and just seize the appreciation. Therefore, halacha lemaisa, he has to pay him off the value of the appreciation in money, not in property. And the third case, balchov yisomim, Rashi says over here, balchov shir the nichse yisomim, b'shilchov avim, this is the same case. It's just instead of, you know, Reuven and Shimon, it's that, Reuven lent money to Shimon. Shimon died, left behind inheritors. Now again, so now the Balchov is coming to collect from the inheritors, from the Yisomim. Same idea, that if halacha lemaisa, the property improved while owned by the Yisomim, the Baal Chov has to go ahead and compensate them for some amount for the appreciation. Good. So we'll say, so just three different cases. So Bechor LePashet, Baal Chov LeLokeach, or Baal Chov LeYisomim. These are all cases where you have to compensate someone because they appreciated the property. They appreciated the property. And the way you pay them for appreciation is in money and not in the particular item. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Ravashi. Is that true? So by the way, there's two things that's happening over here. What are the two things that are happening over here? Number one, what it tells you is when someone causes appreciation in the property, and then the property is taken by the other party, the entitled party is obligated to compensate for some amount of the appreciation. That's number one. Number two, in these three particular cases, appreciation is paid off in cash as opposed to an ownership interest in the actual item itself. Good. So the Gemara says, "Amar Shmuel Ravashi." So Rabbi Yehuda Ravashi, Mi Amar Shmuel, Baal Chov LeLokeach Yoiv LeShevach. Is that true that Shmuel said that when the creditor sees his property, as Shabbos says, so Reuven lent Shimon money, Shimon defaulted. In the interim, Reuven lent Shimon money, Shimon sold off property to Levi, Shimon now defaults, Reuven goes to Levi to collect property, encumbered property, to satisfy his debt. In the interim, Levi improved the property. So now again, we said before that Reuven has to pay Levi some percentage reflecting the appreciation of the property. Did Shmuel really say that? Vamar Shmuel said, Baal Chov Goves HaShevach. Shmuel said pretty explicitly that when the creditor collects the encumbered property, that what does he collect along with the encumbered property? Any improvement, any appreciation. So what's going on? So Gemara says, Amar Le Lokashya, Kan B'Shevach HaMagia L'Ksefayim, Kan B'Shevach She'in Magia L'Ksefayim. So we'll say, this is actually an interesting idea. It depends on the type of shevach. It depends on the type of appreciation. If it's appreciation, there's appreciation that reaches the shoulders and appreciation that doesn't reach the shoulders. Well, so what does this mean? So here, they're gauging appreciation by the growth of produce. By the growth of produce. Look at Rashi. Hamigya l'ksefayim kegon tvua shegodla kol tzarcha nosna l'lokeach odameha. So we'll say, now watch this. Salocha l'maysa. If let's say the land appreciated to the point that it has grain growing, and the grain, so l'ksefayim to the shoulders means fully mature grain. So we'll say if it's the type of appreciation that's quote unquote fully mature appreciation, ultimately that does get compensated to the purchaser. However, if it's lower level appreciation, that's kind of just subsumed under the regular property, and therefore again the creditor will take that. It's an interesting distinction over here. Amrle v'amaisin b'chol yom. But one second, these type of situations occur every single day. V'kamagbi Shmuel afilu shevach hamagia l'ksefayim. And yet Shmuel goes ahead and collects even from appreciation that reaches the shoulder. So also what I'm suggesting over here is that Shmuel seems to, the practice of Shmuel seemed to be that when a creditor would collect land from a purchaser in satisfaction of a debt, so the creditor would collect everything, including any appreciation on the land itself. Amalei, lo kasha, it's not a contradiction. I will say, top of Tzadik Vav, 96a, ha demasik ba kashir ara b'shivcha, ha delo masik be ele kashir ara. So I will say, it's actually interesting, the Gemara makes a very simple distinction. What does it really depend on? It depends on the amount of the debt. I will say, so what Shmuel would allow is as follows. Sometimes the value of the land by itself without the appreciation was enough to satisfy the debt. In those kind of cases, so Shmuel would rule that what? Creditor can collect the land, but what? He can't collect the shevach. Or at least he has to pay back, he has to give the purchaser some amount of the shevach. Versus sometimes the amount of the debt included what? Value of property plus appreciation. And in those cases, ultimately, the creditor was permitted to go ahead and collect the entire amount. Okay, beautiful. So Amar Leib, Sigmar, so he said to him, Hanich Lamanda Amar I Isle Zuze Lelokiach, Lomatsim Sarach Le Labalchov Shapir. So we'll say, all of this makes sense according to the opinion that says, that we'll say, like I said, there's so much here to unravel. There's another discussion. What's the other discussion? We'll say, think about the following case, right? Same case we were dealing with up until now. Reuven lends Shimon money. Right? So now what happens? Obviously, when you lend money, what occurs? If Shimon has property, what happens to Shimon's property? The pashtos, it's encumbered. Fine. After the loan was made, Shimon sells property to Levi. Now what happens? Shimon defaults. Shimon defaults, has no money. Reuven, the creditor, has the ability to go to Levi. So Reuven shows up now at Levi's house. Says, Levi, I'm coming to collect that field that Shimon sold you in satisfaction of my debt. Levi says, you know what? I hear. You're right. Reuven owes you $10,000. Here's what we're going to do. Sorry, Shimon owes you $10,000. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you a check for $10,000. I would like to keep the property that I bought. But of course, I understand I bought encumbered property. So I have to give you back the land. But instead of giving you back the land, I want to give you money. So does the purchaser have the ability to do that? So that's this discussion. Amrlei, so he responded to him, Hanicha, all of this makes sense according to the opinion that says, I islei zuze lelokeach, if the purchaser, so in this case again, Levi, right, I islei zuze lelokeach, lo matzi mesalek leib lebalchov. So he will say, according to this, all of this makes sense according to the opinion that says that halacha lemaisa, a purchaser doesn't have the ability to force the creditor to accept money instead of land. Obviously, if both parties agree, both parties agree. But there's the opinion that says that ultimately the purchaser cannot force Reuven to accept money instead of land. Elamando Amar, according to the opinion that says, I isle zuze lelokeach, that if the purchaser has money, matzi misalek lebalchov, ultimately he has the ability to tell Reuven, the creditor, listen, I'm not giving you the land, I'm giving you money. You're going to be made whole, right? You lend money, you're going to get back money, but I'm not giving you the land. Lemale, that in this case over here, let Levi, the purchaser, say to him, if I had money, I would give you that money and I would remove your claim from the land in its entirety. Hashta, havli giryua da'ara shir shvachai. Here at least, in the case of appreciation, allow me to retain a piece of the land, ultimately corresponding to the amount of my appreciation. Interesting. So the Gemara says, Amrlei, hachamask, you know what's the case here? Kegon deshavye nehili apotiki. So it could very well be that in this case over here, the case in question is where the land, we'll say the land was designated as an apotiki. Remember again, I was saying, there's two different types of encumbrances, right? So in general, when you lend someone money, right? So the debt creates an encumbrance upon all property. Apotiki is a special type of encumbrance where ultimately, again, the borrower says to the lender, apotehekoi, this land I'm identifying as the sole source of your repayment. Now, what's the beauty of apotiki? What's the beauty of it? The beauty of it is it lifts the lien from the rest of your property. You see, normally, it's actually really interesting, when Shimon borrows money from Reuven, right? Reuven lends money to Shimon. So in general, what there is there's a general lien against all of Shimon's property. What's the problem with that? The problem with that is it's going to be hard for Shimon to sell any of his property with a general lien. What's the beauty of apotiki? Apotiki says there's a designated lien on one piece of property. So what that does is it encumbers one piece heavily, but it's able to do, however, is lift the lien on all other properties. The Gemara says that's the case over here. Ultimately, again, you can only have repayments from this. And therefore, I will say that would be the case, ultimately, again, where halacha l'maisa, at least according to Shmuel, halacha l'maisa, if the value of the land by itself meets the debt, then enachinami, the creditor would give back the appreciation, at least some portion of the appreciation to the purchaser. But if halacha l'maisa, again, the value of the debt was only met by value of the land plus appreciation, he would take everything back. Okay, beautiful. Omer Rava. Rava said as follows. Gazel, so I'll say, so again, remember, we still have not resolved when you steal an object, what are you paying back? Now, obviously, in a simple case where Reuven steals a sheep from Shimon and a day later he returns the sheep from Shimon, okay, that's it. He stole the sheep, he gives back the sheep. That's an easy case. Of course, what we're dealing with over here is cases of appreciation or depreciation. What happens in those cases? This is still our raging machlokas. We have our Mishnah, and our Mishnah said it's a simple formula. What's the simple formula? We lock in the value of the item that you stole at the time you stole it, and that's the obligation you have to repay. That's the Mishnah says. Mishnah makes it sound like appreciation belongs to the thief himself. Change allows the thief to acquire the object. That's what it sounds like in the Mishnah. Not sound, that's the Mishnah says. And that's one school of thought. But now we see all of these other opinions. So again, just so if you feel like you missed something, you didn't miss anything. We just haven't. I mean, you might have missed something. But Lamaisa, again, but Lamaisa, we have not done Halacha Lamaisa. This is still this Machlokas. And by the way, I just want to tell you, the Machlokas, there's a new Mishnah on Amud Beis, still say Machlokas. So we're going to wait a little bit to kind of get the entire playing field, and then Emir Hashem do the Halacha Lamaisa. All right, so let's go. Amar Rava. Rava says as follows. Gazal v'shbiyachu machar. So we'll say, watch this. Reuven stole a sheep from Shimon, and now watch this, he improved it, umachar, and then he went ahead and he sold it. Okay, so now we're getting into another interesting case over here. So Reuven stole a sheep from Shimon, improved it, or whatever, it doesn't have to be sheep property, improved it, and now he sold it to Levi. All right, or gazal v'hishpiach v'horish, or what happened? Reuven stole, ultimately again, from Shimon, and now Reuven died, and his children inherit the stolen item. Now, both say, so in both of these cases, the common denominator is object was stolen, object was improved. Case one, the object was sold to Levi. Case two, Reuven died and his children inherited the object. So what's the halacha? Mashish biach machar, mashish biach horish. So both say, whatever ultimately again was improved is sold, and whatever was improved ultimately again was inherited. Meaning what? This was what is Rav essentially saying? Thief keeps improvement. Thief keeps any improvement, and therefore Allah Alamaisa, if he sold it, it's a valid sale. If his kids inherit it, it's a valid inheritance. Look at Rashi. Mashesh biach machar v'shakel lokeach mechza o shlish o revia v'chein yoresh nami kulei shvacha kimas nisin mebnei takanas ha-shavim kidana. So we'll say, so again, now remember, even when you say thief keeps the appreciation, We have another sub-machlokas, right? What's the sub-machlokas? How much appreciation do you actually get to keep? But leaving that aside right now, the point that Rav is making is, Rav is espousing the school of thought, thief keeps appreciation. Therefore, again, if remember, Reuven steals from Shimon, sells to Levi, obviously, again, what's going to happen? Shimon is going to go to Levi and get his object back, right? And that's fine. But Lamaisa, the appreciation will still belong to the thief. So in both the cases of sale as well as inheritance. So by Rava. So Rava says as follows. Hishpiach lokeach mahu. Alright, suppose now this is interesting. What happens in the following case? Right? Reuven steals from Shimon, sells to Levi. Levi improves the object. So now both say, now what's the halacha in this case? Mahu. Basar debaya hader pashta. So we'll say, what happens? When you buy something, I'll say, what are you buying? What are you purchasing? You're purchasing an object. What else are you purchasing? Any rights that the seller had. So in this case over here, the thief who's the seller, what rights did he have in the object? What rights did he have? He had the rights to appreciation. So therefore, I'm going to both say, when the purchaser purchases the object, he's also purchasing rights to appreciation. So therefore, even when owner subsequently comes to reclaim his stolen object, obviously purchaser has to give it back, but purchaser is permitted to retain ultimately appreciation. Incredible. So by Rava, asked the following kasha, Hishpiach Ovid Kochal Mahu is an interesting case. What happens ultimately again if Reuven steals from Shimon and then Reuven sold it to an Akum, he sold it to a Gentile? Now the Gentile went ahead and improved the object. Now Shimon, the victim, is coming to reclaim the object. What happens to the appreciation? Why should we enact a takana for the benefit of an Anju? What purpose does that serve? Let him be right. Let him have to give back the appreciation. What happened over here is. The Akum sold it to a Jew. Okay, so we got a little chagad going on over here. So what happened? Reuven stole it from Shimon. Shimon stole it to Akum, right? Shimon sold it to Akum. Akum sold it to Yehuda. Hakam sold it to Yehuda. So Rabbi says, so now what's the shayla? Sof haba machmas ovid kochavim hu. So Rabbi says, so now the question really becomes, you know, when the ovid kochavim, when Shimon goes in and seizes the property from Yehuda, what happens with the appreciation? So the Gemara wants to suggest, well, no, Yehuda can't keep it. Why? Sof haba machmas ovid kochavim, harik ovid kochavim. So Rabbi says, so remember, lemaisa, actually the truth is, I said something I shouldn't have said. I gave it away a little bit. So we'll say, so now, halacha lemaisa, the Gemara says, we just said before, that when you purchase an object, remember again, what are you getting? You're getting all the rights of the seller. So if you're purchasing from an Ovid Kochavim, and we assume we do not enact this takana for the benefit of the Ovid Kochavim, therefore the purchaser from the Ovid Kochavim doesn't get any rights as well. To which the Gemara said, this is what I was saying. Lo tzricha kigon, the Gazel Yisrael, okay, so I gave it a little bit. The Gazel Yisrael, v'zabna nehile, v'shbicha oved kochavim, v'hadra oved kochavim, v'zabna liyisrael. So I'll say, here's the case. The case is where Reuven stole it from Shimon, right? Ultimately, again, went ahead and sold it to Akum, right? Akum ultimately improved it, and now Akum sold it to Yehuda. And Rabbi says, in this case over here, Shimon's coming and claiming it back from Yehuda. So Rabbi says, so now what's the shayla? Mai, mi amrina kevi demei kari Yisrael v'hadar Yisrael avdi rabbanan takanta. So we'll say, on the one hand, maybe we say like this. Remember, the item began in the hands of a Jew. In other words, in Shimon, Reuven. We're looking at Reuven the thief, right? And it ended up in the hands of a Jew, Yehuda. Right? So therefore, maybe since it began with a Jew and it ended with a Jew, therefore the takana is in effect. We'll say, which takana are we talking about? The takana that says that ultimately, again, the thief keeps appreciation. The thief keeps appreciation. So since it began with a Jew and it ended with a Jew, we'll say, by the way, just full circle over here, why does the thief keep appreciation? Like, what is that? What is that? Remember, takana sashavim. That's another application of takana sashavim, right? Remember, even in a case, because we'll say, remember we saw before, let's take a step back. Remember we saw before that halacha lemaisa, when does takana sashavim apply? When the object is no longer in existence. But if the object is in existence, you have to give back the object, right? But even in that situation where you have to give back the object, what does the thief get to keep, right? Appreciation. How much appreciation? That's machlokes. But it gets to keep appreciation. But say, what's the logic of that? What's the logic of that? The logic of that, the thief could say is, look, you know why that animal appreciated? Why that animal appreciated? Right? Why did it appreciate? Or that object appreciated? I invested in it. Right? I fed it. I sang to it. Right? I walked it. I did whatever I did. Like, I'm heavily invested in stuff that I steal. Right? So, Lemaisa, again, he put in effort. If he has to give that back, once again, that is going to be an obstacle to tshuva. So that's the logic of keeping appreciation. So both say, so now, by the way, I also understand why Lemaisa, that doesn't apply to an akum, right? There is no takanas hashavim by an akum. So therefore, both say, akum doesn't go ahead and get to keep appreciation. So interesting. Now it kind of all comes together. All right, so now I come to this other case. What's this case? Here we go. Reuven steals from Shimon, sells it to Akum. Akum appreciates under Akum. Akum sells it to Yehuda. So now what happens? Well, I'll say now Shimon, the owner, comes to Yehuda and seizes it. So I'll say, so now what's the shayla? What's the shayla? Does Yehuda get to keep Akum? Does Yehuda get to keep Shevach? Does Yehuda get to keep the appreciation? So I will say, so on one hand we could say, so look, maybe we say this. It began in the hands of a Jew, i.e. Reuven, the thief, and it's ending up in the hands of a Jew, i.e. Yehuda. And therefore, again, the takana is in effect, and therefore, ultimately, again, Yehuda should get to keep the appreciation. On the other hand, since there is an akum here in the middle, lo avdu le rabbanan takanta. Maybe the rabbanan did not make the takana, to which the Gemara says, teku. Okay, I'm going to table that one. Let's go weiter. Amar Papa, what's a really interesting Gemara over here? Amar Papa, hi man de gazel dik la mechavrei. I will say, listen to this, for Katlai. If a man Reuven stole a palm tree from Shimon. And I will say, then what happened? He cut it down. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Even though, again, we'll say, imagine for a moment, easier to envision this case, is like Reuven and Shimon have fields, adjoining fields, right? So now there's a palm tree on Shimon's field. Reuven goes over, cuts it down, and it falls onto his field. So now Reuven the thief has the object in his property. So we'll say, so now watch this. Even though now Reuven has taken the palm tree into his field, lo kani, ultimately, again, Reuven has not acquired it. Reuven the thief has not acquired it. It was incredible. My time, I will say, what's the reason? It was called the palm tree when Shimon owned it, right, the owner, and it's still called the palm tree when Reuven owns it. So we'll say, well, we're going to see over here something amazing. In order for certain types of theft to occur, and I'll have to explain when this is, the Gemara says there has to be some type of change in identity. If there's no change in identity, then ultimately, again, the thief ultimately, doesn't acquire it. So for example, over here, what the Gemara is suggesting is a standing palm tree and a felled palm tree, right, whatever, a cut down palm tree, they're both called palm tree. They're both called the dekel. And therefore, halacha l'maisa, the thief doesn't acquire it. Okay, again, we'll say, take a look at Rashi. What does he mean he doesn't acquire it? Lo kani, l'shalume dime, ele yoyev le'dik l'gufe, d'leka shinu ashen. We'll say, now what does this mean? Remember, we saw based on the Mishnah, we'll say, when the object is extant, right? When the object is extant, what's your obligation, right? Reuven steals from Shimon, and the object that he stole is still in existence. What's the halacha? You have to give back the object, right? You don't have the right. Let's say again, Reuven says, I know, but I want to be about tshuva. I really like the object. Here's the cash value. You can't do that. If the object is extant, you have to give back the object. The only time that thief acquires the object is when there's a change, a substantive change. So for example, it's like going back to the Mishnah, right? Reuven goes ahead and steals wood, and he fashions the wood into a utensil. So now what do we say? Reuven acquires the utensil and he pays back, right? He pays back Shimon the monetary value. The Gemara is going through cases over here, essentially what constitutes a change. See, interestingly enough, the Gemara says a felled palm tree is still called a palm tree. And therefore, halacha l'maisa, so Reuven the thief has to give back that palm tree. Now it's wood, but he has to give back the palm tree. Incredible. Next case, the Gemara says, Dikla va'avid guvi, lo kani. We'll say similarly again. If let's say again, Reuven stole a palm tree. And let's say again, I will say in this case, Bepashas, so it would be a palm tree that was a felled palm tree, and he made it into logs. Right? He cut up the palm tree, ultimately making it into logs. Lo kani. Reuven does not acquire it. Why not? Hashtamias got gubi de dikla mikri. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, hashtamias gubi de dikli mikri. As I will say, it's still called logs of a palm tree. And logs of a palm tree is the same thing as a palm tree. So again, all different cases where even though a change has been made, it's not a substantive enough change for the thief to acquire the object, and therefore he has to go and return the object as is. Next, so the Gemara says, Avdinu kutsisa kani. That will say if he took the logs, ultimately, I made them into boards, right? Then in that case, the thief does acquire it. So I will say, so again, why? Because that's a substantive change of identity. Amar Rava. So I will say, so again, so just so this is really fascinating. So now what we're beginning to see is the Gemara telling us that halacha l'maisa, in cases where even though there may be some type of change, see, you would have thought, or I would have thought that halacha l'maisa, any type of change is enough for the gazlon to go ahead and acquire the object. Kamash Malon, what is the Gemara teaching me? It has to be a fundamental change of identity in order for you to keep the object. If it's not a fundamental change of identity, then halacha l'maisa, you cannot keep it. Incredible. Incredible. So the Gemara gives another example. Amar Rava, Haiman de Gazol Luliva. So it's like if a guy stole a lulav. Vavdinu Hutzi, and he made it into leaves. Which I will say essentially comes by separating out, right? Separating the branches on the lulav. Kani ultimately acquires it. Why did he make kar luliva mikri? Fashtu hutzi, because in the beginning it was called the lulav, and now it's called branches. Now it's called leaves. Now it's called leaves. So we'll say that is enough of a substantive identity change. Hutzi vavdinu chofya. What happens if you have leaves and you made it into a broom? We'll say, how do you make it into a broom? Look at Rashi. Chofya, Rashi says, excuse me. Chofya. Thank you. Rashi says, chofya. Shebo mechad mesamais v'cholei kol hutzi l'shnayim desu lohadra. So we'll say, if you take, apparently, it's good to know, if you take each leaf and you split it into two, obviously you're binding it together or it's bound together at the top. That's how you make a broom. So what's the halacha? So if you take the leaves and you make it into a broom, kani, you also acquire it. Why? Me karo hutzi v'hashto chovya. And we'll say, now what's interesting about these cases is it's the same object, right? It's the same object. But identity-wise, it's fundamentally changed. So when identity-wise, it changes, let's say again, from leaves, ultimately into a broom, that is enough for the thief to acquire the object. Chofya va'avdei shorshura. If you take Rabbi Sayyid, the broom, and you make it into a shashura, Rashi says, over a shashura is a rope, lokani. You don't acquire. Why not? My time of the hadr sasale. Because Rabbi Sayyid, what you could do is, you could go ahead and... apparently, again, undo it. In other words, in order to go ahead and make the broom into a rope, what has to happen? I guess you have to braid the independent leaves together, right, to make a rope. But what can you do? You can unbraid it. So because you can unbraid it, ultimately, it's not a significant enough identity change. So, sasolei v'havelei chofya, barira papa, nechleka tiyomes mau. All right, so I'll say this is really interesting. And remember, again, a lulav has a tiyomes. Tiyomes is... the middle leaf, right? So you know, when checking a lulav, right, you look for the middle leaf, and you want to see if that middle leaf is closed, or is split, or is whole. If it's split, the lulav could be pasul. If it's whole, the lulav is kasher. Okay, there are more intricacies in the halacha that I'm telling you right now, but for our purposes, that's enough. So we'll say, so now watch the following case. So let's say now, Reuven steals a lulav from Shimon. And what does he do? He splits the middle leaf. He splits the middle leaf. So what's Rashi says over here? Tiyomes kaf tomer ha'im soya al yon tiyomesi. So he splits the middle leaf. Mahu, what's the halacha? We'll say, is this enough of a substantive change that ultimately, again, would allow Reuven to acquire the object? So we'll say, last line, Tzadik Vava Medalev. So Tashmad, Amrav Masr, Amrav Yeshua, Amrav Yeshua ben Levi, nitla ha'tiyomes pasal. Now we'll say, this is Hilchos Lulav. If you have a lulav and the middle leaf was removed, your lulav is pasul. On the days, my lav, who I didn't say. That's why, by the way, you know, those people who are vigorous and vicious lulav shakers. You know that guy. The guy who needs like a 6 foot radius right around him when lulav and esug. I will say again, that could be incredibly problematic because people don't realize it. But you could easily make your lulav puzzle if you shake it vigorously. You could split open the middle leaf, and if you split open the middle leaf, ultimately again the lulav is puzzle. There's always that guy. Also, you know, when we put it out in the shul, you know, for pickup, you know, for the little shuk we have over here, there's always that guy who comes in and feels the need to shake every single lulav. Literally, you see a light flashing before your eyes. You're like, oh, I spent hours on this. And anyway, so you want to say, my love, who are dealing nechlika? So we'll say, is this not the same halacha ultimately again for if you split the middle leaf? In other words, we'll say, isn't splitting the middle leaf the same thing as removing the middle leaf? Lo, nitla shani. No. Removal is different. Daha chasala. Ultimately, again, because halacha l'maisa, it's missing. So both say, there is a fundamental difference between something that is split versus something that is missing. Iga da Amri, others explain. Tashma da Ramasar Yeshua Levi. Nechlaka tiyomes. Ultimately, again, if the middle leaf is split, naase kmisha nitla upasal. It's as if it's been removed. In other words, we'll say a split middle leaf is no different than a missing middle leaf. And Shmana, so we'll say, so according to that logic, it would seem to be that splitting the middle leaf of a lulav, stealing a lulav and splitting the middle leaf would be enough of a substantive change for the thief to acquire the object, right? Because when he stole it, ultimately, again, it's a kasha lulav. Now we split the middle leaf. It's as if the middle leaf is not there. That would seem to be enough of a substantive identity change. Amara Papa. Hi, man, the gazel afra mechaver. I will say, this is so fascinating. If I steal dirt, right? Reuven goes over to Shimon and he steals dirt. And what happened? Va'avde levinta, and he makes bricks from the dirt. Lo kani. Isn't this incredible? Ultimately, Reuven does not acquire the stolen object. Why not? My taima. The other mashvele afra, because ultimately, again, you can make the, you could easily make the brick back into dirt. Others will say, so now this is another level. So you will say, up until now, what have we seen? Then halacha l'maisa, in order for a change, right? Remember, we'll say we're operating with a core principle. What's our core principle? That in order for the thief to acquire the stolen object, what has to happen? What has to happen is there has to be an identity change. An identity change. It's interesting, I will say, because in the Mishnah, we're speaking about a physical change. So now, ultimately, the Gemara is adding in over here that part of having a physical change is also an identity change. Okay. So now what we're beginning to see is, however, if it has an identity change, but that identity change is what? Easily reversible, that's not called a change. So therefore, if Reuven steals dirt, okay, and now makes it into a brick. So the Pashtos, it sounds like over here, I have identity change, right? It was dirt, now it's a brick. But since halacha l'maisa, the hadar mashvili afra, since halacha l'maisa, again, it can be made back into dirt so quickly. So therefore halacha l'maisa, ultimately, again, it's not called a change. On the other hand, watch this. Avda levinta va'avdi afra. We'll say, on the other hand, if Reuven steals a brick from Shimon, then makes the brick into dirt, kani, he does acquire it. Why? My amrit, dilma hadar va'avid le levinta. You could say, but 1 second. Reuven, it could be easily remade back into a brick. But we'll say, listen to this. Hai levinta achrisihu. This brick is a new brick. Upanim chadashos ba'olakan. And I will say again, panim chadashos. Literally, again, new entities. Well, so you hear this fascinating distinction. So if you steal earth and make it into a brick, that's not enough of a substantive change. Why? Because that brick could be remade back into the same dirt. So therefore, if it's an easily reversible change, then at the end of the day, that doesn't acquire. On the other hand, if Reuven goes in and steals a brick, right, and makes it into dirt, he does acquire. Aye, but you'll say that Lamaisa what? He can make it back into a brick. That's a new brick. Now we'll say, Rashi points out over here, why is it a new brick? Because we'll say, Rashi essentially says, no two bricks are the same, right? Again, I will say, they're making bricks by hand. So even if you're trying to make everything the same, nothing is exactly the same. Therefore, panim chadashos ba'ulakan. Ultimately, again, something new is coming on the scene. We'll say, there's a real profundity in this as well, if you think about it, this idea that change is only meaningful if it's not easily reversible. Right? If the change that is being made is one that is easily reversible, the halacha says that's not change. That's not change, right? So if you steal a brick and make it into dirt, right? So ultimately, again, you steal dirt and make it into a brick, that's not change. It's not change. Why? Because that brick could be very easily remade, ultimately, again, into dirt. Could be okay. We'll say it's a tremendous yisod in life as well, right? We all have changes that we need to make. Change is only meaningful if it has the ability, if you're setting yourself up for sustained change. Now, not to say that unsustained change is not meaningful. Any change is meaningful. But if a person really wants to affect change in life, they have to ask themselves, how could I sustain this change? And we'll say, you see this all the time, right? I make change, and then what happens? What happens? I relapse back into the person that I was. Why does that happen? I'm the only person who this happens to. All right, fine. So it happens all the time. Why does it happen? It happens because at the end of the day, I didn't actually make a plan for sustained change. What I just did is, okay, I'm going to change, and boom, I change. Okay, let's say change is really hard. And if change is not sustained, right, all around me, ultimately what's going to happen? The brick is going to become dirt again. That's just the way it is. I was saying the metaphor is so profound, right? Dirt, you can't build anything with dirt. You can ultimately build something with a brick. So if you take dirt and you make it into a brick, that's beautiful. As long as you have a plan to build with that brick and to sustain the brick kite. But the moment you don't have a plan to sustain brickite is the moment that what? brick is going to be re-relegated ultimately again to its dirt kite status. He'll say it's such a profound metaphor for life. If you want to make change, it's not enough just to think about the change you want to make, but how am I going to sustain that change? How am I going to sustain the brick and prevent it ultimately again from once again becoming dirt? Incredible, incredible. Papa, hi man, the gazel naska. Mechaber, what's this in this case? Reuven goes ahead and steals silver. Naska, what's it? It's like silver. Silver from his friend. Va'avid le'zuzi, and he makes the silver into coins. So what's talacha? Lo kani, ultimately again, he's not kona. Why? Once again, it's a reversible change. Hadr avilu naska, because we'll say, what can you do? You take silver and you make it into coins. What can you do? Melt down coins, and what do you have? What do you have? Silver. It's an easily reversible change. Vavdinu naska. So I'm sorry, zuzi vavdinu naska, but we'll say, ultimately, again, if you take coins and you make it into silver, then kani, you acquire that. I, my amrit, hadr avilu zuzi. And maybe you'll say, but one second, that's a reversible change as well, because you can remake it into coins. No, once again, panim chadashos balakan. We'll say coins are the same thing as bricks. Even if you remake it into coins, it's not the same. Right? It's not the same. You remake it into bricks, it's not the same. So we'll say what you begin to see. So once again, over here, we're seeing not only do you need a change, but you need a change that is not easily reversible. An easily reversible change is not a change, both in halacha as well as in hashgafa. Shchimi va'avdinu charati. So we'll say, if you take, we'll say, shchimi are like tarnished coins, right? Silver coins that became blackened, that became tarnished. So if you take tarnished coins and now you steal tarnished coins and you make them like new, lo kani, ultimately, again, you didn't acquire anything. We'll say, right? Obviously, because they'll tarnish again. Charati v'avdinu shchini kami. This is interesting, we'll say. If you take new coins and you tarnish them, then what? You do acquire them. My amrit. So we'll say, what's the logic? So kani, my amrit. Why would you say hadar avid luhu charati? You can make them new again. The Gemara says meida yadia shechamayhu. We'll say once something becomes tarnished, you can never fully get rid of it. So they both say absolutely incredible. So to go ahead, right? The avoda ultimately again of taking tarnished coins and making them new, you don't acquire it. Why? Because the mice again, it's going to tarnish again. It's reversible. Even if you go ahead and you take new coins and you tarnish them, and now you want to restore to their former luster, I will say it's never quite the same. Never quite the same. And I will say, now, this is one of these things. So you think to yourself, ah, I know where he's going with this one, right? That once, right, once you tarnish it, ultimately, again, you can never make it whole. You can never make it beautiful. So I will say, this is not true. This is not true. See, I will say, here's the difference. While it is true that once you tarnish yourself, perhaps you can never go ahead and regain that former luster that you had, you're right. So we'll say, so instead, what do? Just make yourself into a totally new coin. In other words, sometimes the thing in life is, I recognize that when I tarnish my coin, I can't restore it to what it once was. But you know what I can do? I could totally melt it down and make something brand new again. And in that case, I will say, and this becomes one of those things in life, you know, there are two different models in life, right? Rav Kook talks about this in his Oras HaTshuva, that sometimes, again, a person could experience change within themselves, right? And again, it's the same me, but Lamais, again, I just have to tweak different aspects. Or sometimes the me that is so fundamentally broken that I have to create a totally new personality. So they both say, so sometimes in life, I could get the tarnish off my coins and I'm good. Other times in life, the tarnish is so pervasive that it's not enough just to polish a little here, a little bit there. But sometimes ultimately, again, I have to totally melt down the silver and create something dramatically new, right? Different times in life call for different levels of personal rectification. Okay, so we'll say incredible. So halacha lemaisa, we'll say for our purposes, halacha lemaisa, what emerges is that, again, not only do you need change in order to acquire the object, but really it has to be change that is not easily reversible. Incredible. Let's go back to Zeh klal kol gazlonim mashlimin kishas agzela. So the Mishnah said, this is the rule. In general, a thief pays the value in accordance with the value of the object at the time it was stolen. So we'll say, the Gemara says, la suye mine. I will say, in general, whenever the Mishnah says, zeh klal, this is the rule, This is the rule comes to include something. So what is it coming to including? Lasui had Amr Rabbi Lo, Ganav Tala Venasa Ayo, Egel Venasa Shar, Nasa Shine Biyado. Ukino. Supposed to listen to this. Here's what it comes to include. This is incredible. So we'll say, let's say again, Reuven steals a calf. Reuven steals a calf from Shimon, and what happens? The calf becomes an ox while Reuven the thief owns it. Now we'll say, now watch this. As a result, now the object has changed. What happens when you steal an object, right? What happens when you steal an object and it changes in the domain of the thief? What's the halacha? What's the halacha? Ultimately, thief acquires it. Now we'll say, watch the application of this. Therefore, tavach umachar shalohu toveach shalohu mocher. Wow. Let's say, watch this. So now let's say, Reuven stole a calf from Shimon. And now what happens? So Reuven steals the calf from Shimon while Reuven owns it. The calf becomes an ox. So I will say, what's the halacha now? So now subsequently, after it becomes an ox, Reuven goes ahead and slaughters it and sells it. Now generally, what's the halacha if you slaughter and sell a stolen object? What's the halacha? Arba v'chamisha. In this case, it's not arba v'chamisha. Why not? Because the ox belongs to Reuven, because he acquired it. Pretty incredible, I will say. So Gemara says, the guzzle, padna de ture mechavre. So there was a guy who stole a pair of oxen from his friend. Azal karav buhu karva, zara buhu zara. So we'll say, so what happened? Talach alamai, so what did he do with it? He plowed a field with it. Right? He literally plowed a field with it. L'sof adren lamare. Then we'll say, first of all, and he gave it back to the owner. Azal lachamim dram nachman. He came before the owner, right? The owner came before al-nachman. Amar lehu, zilu shomalu shivcha da'ashpach. Go ahead. And again, it's not just enough to return the object. Remember now, you used the ox to go ahead and plow the field. So now there's shevach, there's appreciation ultimately again to the field itself. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rava, Turi Ashbach, Arla Ashbach. I don't understand. There's appreciation just about the oxen, not about the field. So the Gemara says, Amar Mi Kamino Nashim Kuli, Pal Kamino. You're right. I didn't say I have to pay back all of the appreciation. Right? Because obviously, again, part of that appreciation is linked in the value of the field, but at least part of the appreciation that's linked to the oxen. Amalei, Sof, Gezelahu, Vika Hadra Be'ene. But one second, why? At the end of the day, I'll say this should be an open shut case. Oxen were stolen, oxen were returned. Discussion over, right? What more is there to discuss in this case? This nan, kala gazlan mishlam and kishas agzela. Ultimately, again, when you steal an object and the object is extant, ultimately, all you have to do is pay back in accordance with the amount that was stolen. So he said to him, remember again, this was Rav Nachman. He said to him, haven't I told you before? When I'm judging a case, don't talk to me. For some people, it's when they're watching the game, right? And for other people, Rahmana Litzlan Lo Aleinu, right? And I will say, and for others, it's when they're involved in adjudicating a case. So I'm adjudicating a case, I told you, don't talk to me. I have to concentrate. Because Rav Huna, my friend, said that I, Rav Nachman, and Shmuel, that Shavar Malka, right? I and Shavar Malka, we are brothers in judgment. In other words, that we are highly skilled judges, able to adjudicate cases. And the reason why I was machmer with this guy is Hai inish kazlona atikohu ubaina di iksane. Generally, again, if you steal oxen and you give back oxen, and the item that you stole is the item that you're returning, that's it, we're done. I said, why am I charging this guy an additional amount for appreciation for the value that he got from plowing the field? Because this guy is a habitual offender. And because he's an habitual offender, therefore, again, I felt the need to throw the book at him to charge him not only, again, for the actual gzela, but also, halacha lemaaseh, again, for the appreciation. I will say, shkayach, we'll stop over here at Mishnah tomorrow. Again, we're not finished with the sugya. There's still more to the sugya. The rest will be continued tomorrow. Incredible. Absolutely incredible, Gemara. Shkayach, everyone. All right, everyone, Zoom, have a great day.